Hiranyakashipu here is asking a very pertinent, very relevant question. He's saying, O most unfortunate Prahlad, you have always described a supreme being other than me, a supreme being who is above everything, who is the controller of everyone, and who is all-pervading. But where is he? Where is he? If he is everywhere, then why is he not present before me in this pillar? So he's saying, Jagadishvara Kvaso, where is that Lord of the universe that you always talk about? Where is God? This is kind of a theme of the story of Lord Nrisimhadev. This question of where is God? Where is the Lord? If you, in fact, this is perhaps the most pressing question that people all over the world who have any connection to God are always asking. Where is God? Where is he? Although Hiranyakashipu here is asking it as a demon, one doesn't need to be a demon to ask this question. Where is God? In fact, everywhere you look in this world, everyone is asking this question. If you're demoniac, the demons, they ask, where is God so I can kill him? Right? That's my desire. I want to find out where he is so I can kill him. Just like Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu searched this universe looking for Lord Vishnu, just so they can kill him. Those who are suffering in this world, they ask, where is God? But why? Why doesn't he do anything to help me? I'm suffering. Where is God now? Why doesn't he help me in my suffering? This is one of the questions that every religious person, every theistic person in this world faces. In fact, it's the most difficult problem of philosophy or theology, is why does God cause all this suffering? Or if he doesn't, why doesn't he do something to stop it? Where is God in all my suffering? Those who are materialistic, they ask the same question. Where is God so that I can get what I want from him? Right? Everyone's asking the same question, but with different motivations. Where is God so I can kill him? Where is God so he can help me in my suffering? Where is God so I can get what I want? And the devotee asks, where is God so that I can serve him? Where is he? Where is the Supreme Lord? And earlier on in this story of Prahlad Maharaj, Prahlad is asking the same question. Where is God? Or where is Krishna? It says that when he was before this trouble started with his father, he was spending his days absorbed in love or devotion for Krishna, in the mood of a child for his mother. And he would, just like when a little child loses sight of his mother, can't see the mother anywhere, then he starts crying very naturally. Where is my mother? Until the mother's around, things are okay. But when the mother's gone, then all of a sudden this child becomes very insecure. In the same way, Prahlad Maharaj, the Bhagavatam describes, was asking the question, where is Krishna? Right? Whenever he couldn't see the Lord, whenever he couldn't see God, he'd get very anxious, very worried, and he would start crying, it says. After all, he was only 5 years old. Right? And this is describing his life up to the point of meeting Lord Nrisimhadev. So, you know, 3, 4, 5-year-old child. When he couldn't see the Lord, he would start becoming anxious. He'd start crying. And immediately it says the Lord would come and show himself to Prahlad. Of course, only Prahlad could see him. But he'd show himself. And he'd become so happy and start laughing and jumping and dancing. Exactly like, again, a baby, when put back into the hands of the mother, immediately becomes happy and starts laughing and cooing and making all kinds of happy sounds. And he was shameless in this, the Bhagavatam says. He didn't have any worry as to what the world might think. It's just like a child is shameless in crying. A child won't worry, well, here I'm sitting in the middle of class and there's so many people and it's such a serious atmosphere, how can I cry? No, mother's not here, just crying. So like that, Prahlad Maharaj was so natural. Where's Krishna? Where's God? Where's Krishna? This was his question. And this is Hiranyakashipu's question also here. Where's your God? And where's this person I always hear about, I always talk about? And the answer, of course, that Prahlad Maharaj gives him is that he's everywhere. You don't have to look very far. You don't have to look anywhere, actually. Anywhere you look, he's there. He's ever present. In this pillar, yes, but also in every atom. Andantarastha paramanu jayantarastham. He's in every single atom of this creation. Because of his presence, this creation has existence. If he were to be absent, then instantly nothing would exist anymore. And everything would be gone, it'd be destroyed. He is what gives substance to anything in this world. He's everywhere. And this is, of course, what we sing so many times every day. Ito nrsingha parato nrsingho. Yato yato yami tato nrsingha. Bahir nrsingho hridaye nrsingho. Nrsinghamadim sharanam prapadye. This verse, so nice. It's a very simple verse. Ito nrsingha, Lord Nrsingadev is here. Parato nrsingha, and he's over there. Yato yato yami, wherever I go, here or there, tato nrsingha, there's nrsingha. Bahir nrsingha, he's outside. Hridaye nrsingha, he's inside. He's in my heart. Therefore, nrsingham adim sharanam prapadye. Therefore, I have no choice but to seek refuge in Lord Nrsingadev. Where else are you going to look? Everywhere you turn, you find Nrsingadev. Might as well surrender to him. Right? Might as well seek refuge in him. You cannot escape him. Right? He's everywhere in this world. This verse is basically answering this question. Jagadishvara kvaso. Where is the Lord of the universe? And the answer is, ito nrsingha parato nrsingha. He's here and he's over there. Wherever I go, he's also there. Now, of course, Krishna is present everywhere. This means different things to different people. For an atheistic person, or a demonic person like Hiranyakashipu, this is a cause for great fear, great worry. Just imagine reciting this verse. Just imagine reading this verse as a demon. Ito nrsingha parato nrsingho. Yato yato yami tato nrsingha. It can be quite panicky, right? Quite worrying. If you're an atheist, ito here, I try to run away from my death here, and here he is. Ito nrsingha parato nrsingha. I go there, and he's also there. Wherever I turn, Nrsingadev is there, ready to kill me. Very, very frightening. But for a devotee, it's exactly the opposite. It's a sense of great protection, a sense of great refuge. That, oh, the Lord is here. He's with me. He's always present. The moment I call, he'll come out of the woodwork, literally. Right? He'll come out of the stonework, shall we say, right? And the pillar. Now, someone might ask, well, okay, so we ask the question, where is God? And the answer is, God is everywhere. If that is the case, if he's here and he's also there, and wherever I go, he's there, he's inside and he's outside, he's present in every atom, then why can't I see him? Right? That's the next question that Hiranyakashipu asks. Why can't I see him? If he is everywhere, then why is he not present before me? Just recently, I was giving a lecture to a group, an educated audience, not exactly academics, not exactly, you know, practicing devotees, but learned audience. And one after the lecture, one person came to me and said, you know, I have this question, this pressing question for a long time. A lot of people ask me, I ask also, if it's true, this was, he was an Indian gentleman, if it's true that we believe that God is present in everything, that God is all-pervading, the Upanishads talk about sarvam kalvidam brahma, that the Lord is in fact present in everything, he is everything, then why can't I see him? Why is it so difficult to perceive God? You look and you look and you look everywhere, and yet you still miss him. Why is it that the people who study this universe most carefully end up missing him altogether? The answer is given by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita in this very nice verse, quite famous. He says, Matta parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya mai sarvam idam protam sutre manigana eva. He says, Matta parataram nanyat. He starts off by making a very bold statement. Matta parataram nanyat. There is no truth superior to me, no other who is beyond me. Parataram. And just to emphasize that, kinchidasti, he says, kinchid, no one at all. Right? The first line is sufficient to make the point. But in the second line, he says, kinchid, nothing. You can look everywhere. Kinchidasti, there's nothing superior to me, O Arjun. Okay, then why can't we see you anywhere? Aha. Mayi sarvam idam protam sutre manigana eva. He said, what is my relationship to this world? Mayi sarvam idam protam. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung upon a thread. As pearls are strung upon a thread. Now let's just think about this for a moment. Pearls on a thread, a necklace. Imagine you have a well-made, beautiful necklace. What's the sign, what's the characteristic of a well-made necklace? How do you know when a necklace is well-made? And I'm not talking about the value of the pearls here, but well-made. Yeah, if you can't see the thread, right? If you have a necklace, just like a garland, right? This is a well-made garland. You can't see the thread anywhere, okay? But if you have a necklace, and there's a few pearls dangling at the bottom, and then you see this thread and it's cutting your neck, then it's not a very well-made necklace, right? Either it's not well-made, or it's gone bad, or it's coming loose, or something, it's going to break soon. It's not a good sign. But a well-made necklace, it's so well-made that you cannot see the thread anywhere. Now, suppose I were to come and say, well, you know, you tell me, you ask me to accept on faith that there's a thread in each one of those pearls. There's no thread. I look and I look and I look and I try to pull it apart, and there's no thread there. It's just pearls. Show me the thread. Where's the thread? Of course, that's foolish. The thread's there. But the point is, precisely because it's such a good necklace, you're not going to be able to see it. But without that thread, every single pearl would be scattered on the ground. Right? Nothing would be held together. It's there in every single pearl. In the same way, this whole world is like a necklace. Krishna's constructed everything. But he's such a good necklace maker. Right? He's such a good jeweler that nowhere in this creation can you see him if you choose not to. If you choose not to, you can spend your whole life trying to pull those pearls apart and you still won't be able to see the thread. It's such a tightly woven, well-made necklace. Because Krishna is the best of creators. He's very expert at what he does. And he's created in such a way. But if you know where to look, if you have some simple intelligence, as Prabhupada say, any person who has a little bit of intelligence can understand, well, how can that necklace stay together without that thread? And indeed, if you cut that thread, then every pearl is scattered. Each individual pearl is there on the ground. And what's the value of that? What's the value of that pearl? Okay, it's nice. You can show it off. You can show people how rich you are, how many pearls you have. But there's no practical use for it. You can't put it on your ear as an earring. You can't put it around your neck as a necklace. You can't put it around your finger as a ring. It all needs a thread. It needs something to connect. So this is what Krishna consciousness means. This is what Prahlad Maharaj is doing here. He's taking this question, where is Krishna? And asking that question in every aspect of our lives, of his life. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna in this pearl? Sometimes people say, okay, so I understand God is everywhere. He's in everything. In fact, Krishna explains to us how we can see him if we so choose him. Just after this verse in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Rasoham apsukonteya prabhasmi shashi suryayo pranava sarvavedeshu shabdakhe paurusham nishu. He says, I'm the thread strung through everything. So where can you see me? Rasoham apsukonteya. I'm the taste and water. I'm the thread running through that. Prabhasmi shashi suryayo. I'm the light of the sun and the moon. Sometimes people take this description, they say, okay, if God is everywhere and God is everything, then everything must be God. Then everything is one. Then we're all united. And from saying that where is God and God doesn't exist, they go to the other extreme, that God is everything and everything is God and we're all one. And they become impersonalists. From atheism to impersonalism. Prahlad Maharaj here, he's giving the vision, the example of the devotee. The devotee has the conviction that my Lord, as a person, personally, he's present in every atom. Krishna's there. Prabhupada is describing it in the purport so beautifully. That when Hiranyakashipu is pointing to that pillar, saying, if he's everywhere, is he in this pillar? Prahlad Maharaj looks to that pillar and he can see the Lord standing there. And so he says, yes. For him, it's as obvious as if, you know, someone were to ask me, is Bhagadatta there? And I'd look there and go, yeah, he's there. It's like, what's so, you know, Hiranyakashipu thinks he's asking a difficult question, perhaps a deep philosophical question, or I don't know, a challenging question. But for Prahlad Maharaj, it's as obvious as someone looking that way and saying, oh yes, that's Bhagadatta. He's there. And Prahlad Maharaj looks to the pillar and he goes, yeah, he's there. My Lord is there. Because he can see the Lord standing there as a person. He can see the Lord personally present in everything. Not that everything is impersonally abstract. God is, you know, an energy coursing through everything. He is, of course. Right? He is. But that's not the devotee's vision. The devotee's vision is Krishna's there personally, as a person. And the reason the devotee can see the Lord in that way, the reason the devotee sees that Krishna personally is present everywhere, is because he has the eyes of love. This is what the verse Prabhupada is quoting here, Premanjana Churito Bhakti Vilochanena. Because he has the eyes of love. It's inevitable, it's unavoidable for a devotee. Just like when you love someone, when someone is madly in love with someone else, this usually happens in this world for a brief period immediately after falling in love. The intensity of emotion that's present there. You can't stop thinking about the other person. And everything in this world reminds you of that person. Or like a mother and a child. And the child grows up and gets older and leaves home and so on and so forth. And one day while cleaning the house, the mother comes across the child's old shoes, the baby shoes, right? Somehow they got tucked into a corner and everyone forgot about them. And as soon as she pulls out those shoes and looks at them, immediately there's a flood of emotion that returns. All these memories. She sees her child there, right? Does she see, oh, this is, a possession belonging to the child. This is, you know, this is something I bought for, you know, 15 pounds at a store for the child to make sure my boy had shoes to wear. No, she sees her boy. She sees her girl there. It's directly present. Why? Because there's a relationship of love. There's a personal relationship there. Everything in this world reminds the person who is in love of the beloved. And this is why a devotee, everywhere he looks, everywhere she looks, they see Krishna. Right? Krishna's there. Where someone else might see, you know, the impersonal, someone else might see God's power, someone may see, you know, the unity of creation and so forth. The devotee looks and he sees Krishna. Krishna's there. And this is why when Prahlad Maharaj says that, yes, here's Krishna, he's there in that pillar, then the Bhagavatam says, Satyam vidhatum nijabhritya bhashitam. Satyam vidhatum nijabhritya bhashitam. In order to make true the word of his devotee, that Prahlad says, yes, my Lord is there. And Krishna says, okay, I'm here. Right. To make true the word of his devotee, Krishna says, okay, I'll come from a pillar. This verse actually shows up just a few verses down the road. It's my favorite verse in this story of Nrisingadev. I'll just read it for you here. Where'd it go? Here it is. Satyam vidhatum nijabhritya bhashitam vyaptim cha bhuteshvakileshu chatmanah adrishyatatyad bhutarupa mudvahan stambhe sabhayam namrigam namanusham. To prove that the statement of his servant Prahlad Maharaj was substantial. In other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. Krishna took all this effort, right, all this effort of coming up with a completely new form, half man and half lion. A form that when he sees, Hiranyakashipu looks at, he starts laughing. And he says, this is your God? This is what he looks like? A half man, half lion? An animal? Is this who your God is? This is the person you've been worshipping? He's comparing himself to Nrisingadev. Right? Saying, here I am, the king, so majestic, so handsome, so powerful, good looking. And instead of me, you chose to worship him? The Lord comes in this unusual form, namrigam namanusham. Not animal, not human being. Stambhe sabhayam. And he chooses to come out of a pillar in an assembly hall. A pillar in an assembly hall. Just think, you know, where should Krishna come from? He should come like when Gajendra called him. How did Krishna arrive? He came on the back of Garuda. Garuda skandam aropya. Right? He comes on the back of Garuda and pulls up his devotee. This is how God should arrive. In a brilliant streak of lightning or thunderbolt or a bright light from the sky or the heavens part and God should descend. Right? This is what's fitting for God. Instead, he's jumping out of a pillar. In a half-man, half-lion form? Adbhutam. This is amazing. Right? The Lord is willing to go to this extent. Why? Satyam vidhatum nijabhritya bhashitam. Just to keep the word of his devotee. That's all. So much the Lord is willing to do. What is he not willing to do for his devotee? That's the question. In fact, if you look in Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole emphasis of the story of Lord Nrisingadev is Prahlad Maharaj. That's the entire. The story of Lord Nrisingadev is found in all the different Puranas. You study Vishnu Purana, you know, Vayu Purana, Padma Purana, Skanda Purana, everywhere. The story of Lord Nrisingadev is famous. And it's one of the Lord's most wonderful incarnations. You find it everywhere. But the Bhagavatam's description of the story of Nrisimhadev is unique. It's different. Because the story is not actually about Nrisimhadev so much. He's there. But the primary hero of the story is Prahlad. You can just see this just by a cursory examination of the chapters. There's like, what, 7, 8, maybe 9 chapters dedicated to the Nrisimhadev story. Right? And at least 7 of them are dealing with Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad Maharaj, the most exalted of devotees. Prahlad Maharaj teaches his schoolmates what Prahlad learned in the womb. Prahlad offers prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev. It's all about Prahlad. Even in the chapter, Hiranyakashipu terrorizes the universe, half of it is about Prahlad. This is what the Bhagavatam is interested in, is Prahlad. This is why it's called Bhagavata. Bhagavata means the devotees of the Lord, those who are related to Bhagavan. That's Bhagavata. In fact, you find this throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, this emphasis. Just think of the story of Ritrasura, killed by Indra. Right? The story of Ritrasura is so famous and so old. It's found all the way in the Rig Veda, very first of all the Vedas. The oldest sacred text known to human beings, right? Still present. That story is there, and it's told over and over and over again in every single Purana and every single sacred literature within the Vedic literature. But always, it's about how powerful Indra was and how he could defeat this demon known as Ritrasura. In the story of Bhagavatam, you know what the emphasis is on? Ritrasura. Right? What a wonderful devotee he was. His wonderful qualities that shine forth. Indra doesn't look like much at all in front of him, right? Even though Indra eventually kills him. It's so funny, actually. Ritrasura, you know, in that story, he's so powerful. Indra, he throws his thunderbolt and can't kill him. And he's getting very disheartened, very despondent. And he gives up and he just sits down and starts sulking. And it's Ritrasura who comes back and says, "Get up, come on, fight. You're supposed to kill me. Because he's received as he was born with Ritrasura, this was the prediction, this was the boon Indra had received, that he would be killed by Indra. So he's like, this is what's meant to be happen. You're supposed to be killing me. This is going to happen. Why don't you just get up and be enthusiastic? And he starts preaching to him, this is your duty, and why don't you depend on the Supreme Lord, and get up and fight. And of course they do fight, and then as soon as they start fighting, he does his duty and fight really hard. Ultimately, he's killed, right? But his glories emerge so wonderfully. Ritrasura, the saintly demon. And then again, in the story of Lord Vamanadev. It's Vamanadev who comes out looking bad, I think. And he's cheating Bali Maharaj in a completely unjust way. And the Bhagavatam uplifts Bali Maharaj to the point of a Mahabhagavata. Right, of one of the Mahajans. That look at this is the person who's willing to sacrifice everything for the sake of the Lord. This is the unique characteristic of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is what makes it so special. Right? What makes it so important. Dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. It's what makes it so special. That here the focus is very much on the devotees of the Lord. This is why it's called Bhagavata. And their level of surrender, their devotion to the Lord. And what Krishna is willing to do for their sake. In each one of these 3 stories that I just mentioned, Prahlad, Ritrasura, and Bali Maharaj, imagine, all 3 are demons. All these devotees are born in demon families. And all 3 are glorified above everyone else, all the demigods present, everyone. The Lord uplifts them to the highest point. The Bhagavatam makes this point over and over and over and over again. that look at what Krishna is willing to do for the sake of his devotee. Look at what Krishna is willing to do just to enjoy some leela or pastime with his devotee. It doesn't matter who that person is. Of course Krishna would come down to protect a brahmana. Of course Krishna would come down to protect a great king or someone who's powerful or someone who's very elite in human society. But look, here Krishna is coming down for a demon. Or for an animal like Gajendra. Or for a monkey like Hanuman. This is what makes the Lord so glorious, so powerful. There's one very nice story I like. Prabhupada tells of Akbar and Birbal. You may have heard this story before. Right? Akbar one time asks Birbal, he says, so why is it that your God always has to come running down from heaven to earth for every little problem? He's taking so many avatars over and over and over again. Why? Our God, he doesn't have to do that. He stays in heaven, maintains his dignity. Right? Not this namrigam namanusham sthambhe sabhayam, showing up half man, half animal. He doesn't make himself so undignified like your God does. Why does your God have to keep running down? And of course, Birbal, he doesn't answer. He never answers directly. This is what makes him so intelligent. He always waits and arranges something to convey the answer. So one day there's a nice festival in his court and there's some noka vihar going on, some beautiful boat swimming activities. There's rowing activities. There's the area of the court, and the sunken area is filled with water and there's nice music and everyone's enjoying and the king is watching. And Birbal has arranged things in advance so that the person, the lady, holding the king's small child, toddler, accidentally drops the child into the water. And as soon as the child falls into the water, you know the first thing that happens? The king runs down from his throne. There he is seated up there. Comes running down. And before anyone can pick the prince out of the water, he's in the water. With all his royalty and his crown and his clothing and so forth, he's there swimming in the water to catch his son. And Birbal says, Maharaj, what are you doing? There's your whole army's present here. I'm here. Everyone, all your well-wishers here. You think we'd let the prince drown? To relax. Why don't you stay there? We'll get the prince. And Akbar looks at him like, are you crazy? Are you nuts? This is my son. I can't sit there and just watch as he's drowning. I know you can all do it, but he's my son. I have to come. I can't help it. I didn't think before coming. Should I go or not? Who could get there faster? Could I? If I got down, or maybe Birbal, or should I order someone else? What's the best strategy in this situation? Right? What looks best? What will people say? No, you don't consider stuff like that. You just go, right? Instantly. That's how Krishna responds to his devotee's call. That's how Krishna responds when the devotee says, where are you? And for everyone else, when they ask, where's God? Where's Krishna? Krishna, he considers, he thinks, well, maybe I'll show myself by sending him some smack by Maya, some material suffering. Or maybe I'll have him stumble into a temple. Or maybe I'll show up as death. Or so many ways Krishna has. Or I have a book distributor meet him on the street. Anyone asks, where is God? Yes, Krishna responds. But when his devotee, his son, his child, like Prahlad says, where is Krishna? And then Krishna doesn't think, he doesn't consider. oh, should I go like this or should I go like that? Will it look good if I'm half man or half lion? Will it look good if I come out of a pillar or not? Right? No, he says, no, gotta go. Right? There's just no thinking there. It's a deep, deep response. Name bhakta pranashyati. Prabhupada's quoting here. My devotee will never perish. This is the one thing Krishna never fails with. Right? The one thing he never, never fails in is that protection to the devotee. So we have to actually, we can follow in the footsteps of Hiranyakashipu here. Ask this question, where is Krishna? Right? Where is Krishna? Of course, in a completely different mood. Maybe it's better to follow in the footsteps of Prahlad. He was asking the same question. Where is Krishna? In everything in our lives, where is Krishna? Where can I find him? Not just, oh, okay, Krishna is here in the temple once a week when I come, or once a day, or whenever. But in every aspect of our lives, where is Krishna? This is the crucial question. It's the question the entire universe is asking. But we have to ask, where is Krishna? We get into the car, where is Krishna? We go to the grocery store, where is Krishna? It may sound like a naive thing or a stupid thing, but this is exactly what a devotee does. This is exactly what Prahlad Maharaj was doing. This is what allowed him to survive through everything that he went through. Because everywhere he's asking the question, where is Krishna? We go to work, where is Krishna? We change the baby's diapers, where is Krishna? Right? Everywhere, where is Krishna? In every situation, because he's there. Right? He's always there. If we can't see him, okay, then we need to work on something. But Krishna is there. Just like when Hanuman, when he was given the necklace of pearls by Mother Sita, same thing, Sutre Mani Ganayiva. He was given a necklace of pearls. And he immediately took that necklace and he starts breaking it with his teeth, the pearls. And everyone says, why are you doing that? What's Hanuman? He's just a foolish monkey. He doesn't know the value of pearls. He says, no, I'm looking for Ram. I'm looking for Ram here. Because if there's no Ram here, where's Ram? Right? If there's no Ram here, then what's the value of the pearls? It's useless to me. Where's Ram? He was always asking. Where's Krishna? Prahlad was always asking. Parikshit Maharaj, this was his life story. This is why he's called Parikshit. He was examining everything and everyone and saying, where's Krishna? Where's that one I saw in the womb? Where's Vishnu? Is it him? Is it him? Where is Krishna? Then Krishna shows himself or doesn't show himself. That's up to him. Right? We can't force Krishna to appear. He chooses himself. Vivrnate tanum swam, the Upanishad say. He makes his own choice. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyana medhaya na bahunashatena. You cannot force God to appear by great speeches and great learning. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyana medhaya. Not by a lot of intelligence. Na bahunashatena. Not by a lot of learning. No. Tam vivrnute tanum swam. He only appears to him whom he chooses to show himself. When Krishna comes, how he comes, that's up to him. You see, in Prahlad Maharaj's story, Krishna waited a pretty long time to show himself. Right? It took a while. Means Prahlad Maharaj had already been thrown off a cliff. He had already been boiled in hot oil. He had already been trampled underfoot elephants. He had already been abused by his father. Perhaps besides all the physical suffering. You know the things that his father told him? He said, you're like a limb that's festering on a body. And such a limb has to be amputated for the protection of the entire body. So I'm going to cut you and throw you away. You're useless. He rejected him. Imagine for a five-year-old child to suffer that kind of, I mean, okay, physical abuse, obviously, but emotional rejection also. Just think how Dhruva Maharaj reacted, right? When he was rejected by his father. His father didn't even say anything. He just failed to say something, which is come sit on my lap. He's rejected, not even kicked out, not even asked to be killed, thrown out of the family, disinherited. No, just can't sit on my lap. And how heavily it affected Dhruva Maharaj, how much it hurt him that he went off into the forest to perform austerities to find Lord Vishnu. Imagine what Prahlad went through. His own father taking up a sword to kill him. Throwing him out of the family. Trying to get him killed in so many ways. Krishna waited a pretty long time to come. Right? When the Lord decides to come is up to him. Right? That's the challenge of being a devotee. Right? Yes, he's here. Ito nasingha parato nasingho. Yato yato yami tato nasingho. Bahir nasingho hridaye. He's everywhere. He's here, he's there. He's inside, he's outside. Wherever I go, he's there. But when he chooses to show himself to me, that's up to him. That's his prerogative. Our job is simply to keep looking for him, to ask, where is Krishna? This was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood. Where is Krishna? This was the mood of the gopis. Where is Krishna? In every situation, where is Krishna? We do that, and one day Krishna will show himself to us. He will. We'll get his attention. He'll finally listen. Of course he will. Right? But he has his own plan to work out. He has his own sweet time in which he shows himself. As long as we don't stop asking that question, where is Krishna? So I'm going to pause at this point and see if there are any questions or comments that you'd like to make.